Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The Football Show on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
I'm prepared to do anything I can.
Well, do it then. Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Pat and Evan, come on in. Good evening.
How are you doing? You well?
We're not well, Pat. We've had a difficult day here in Ireland, to tell you the truth. We are frayed. The nerves are frayed. So last night there was breaking news. It was leaked news that we were all headed for full lockdown, level 5, which is our maximum level lockdown. And people have spent the day worrying non-stop, listening to radios, watching television non-stop. It now seems, and I'm speaking to you before it's fully confirmed, but it now seems it won't be quite that drastic. And so now we're all going, I mean, it's been energy draining and okay, it's not as drastic as feared, but then, you know, NPHET, the group recommending level 5, did recommend level 5. The government are not going with that. So it's all going on here. It's been that kind of a day in Ireland.
There is a fear that it could be going very similar ways in the UK quite soon. All the numbers are going up, not quite exponentially yet, but it's all kind of going up as well. So, not easy times. I absolutely accept that. And it's just one of those things. We're going to have to find a way to get around it. Oddly, there are certain places where everything seems dead normal. It's really weird. I was down at the Everton game the other day. Now, Liverpool's pretty close to lockdown. Liverpool's the worst place in the UK at the moment, right? So you can't meet over to 6 people and different friends and rooms, etc. But I was down at the Everton game and it was really quite normal. Then you walked out into the streets in Liverpool and the place is empty, absolutely weirdly empty. And it's the strangest thing. And I've been going around a little bit, you know, not taking public transport or that, not meeting anyone. And some cities are extraordinary and some aren't. About 3 weeks ago, I was in London. I'll tell you a little story about this. And I had to get across London and I had to get a tube. And I didn't want to get it, but I got on the tube. At 6 p.m. in a weekday, under Oxford Circus Station, it was empty. Unbelievable. You've never seen it like it. It's like the apocalypse. So it's happening everywhere and it's extraordinary to see. But some places seem weirdly normal and some places seem like something extraordinary is actually happening, which it is.
It sure is. You use the word weird. There are weird things happening in the Premier League right now. I mean, we'll dig into the specifics of yesterday, but it's just odd. What's going on? What's the reason here?
Right, okay, so I've tried to think about this because it can't be just a fluke. It's gone on for, you know, 4 games. So I think I'm right in saying there hasn't been a 0-0 draw yet in the Premier League, right? Which is kind of weird after 4 rounds of football. But also the massive scorelines you're getting. You know, the weird ones we got yesterday, obviously, Manchester United, Liverpool. But there's odd other halves now and again that you think, what? You know, Chelsea were 3-0 down against West Brom. You're thinking, come on, seriously. So, number of reasons. It's never one reason, right? Number one, most of the players haven't had a full pre-season, right? So a lot of them aren't fit enough to play the number of games they've been asked to play just now. And they are playing slightly too many games, more than they would normally do. So they're almost, some of them are just kind of still in pre-season mode. It's not that they're not trying hard, it's just their bodies aren't quite up yet. So that's definitely one thing. Remember, it was a very limited break they had as well, after what was an unusual end to the season. So there's all that stuff as well. But I think it's wider than that. I think, as I've championed, and many of us have, this focus on attack-minded systems, you know, I take it back to Barcelona, you know, but look at Man City, look at Liverpool. The teams that are winning things are attack-minded sides. So everyone's thought, all right, that's how you do it then, is it? And then they've kind of left the defence as like a really secondary thing. And I watch a lot of the teams. I was at Leeds United a couple of weeks ago. Honestly, they were doing things. I was like slack-jawed. I couldn't believe what they were doing. You know, they were attacking at 4-1 up and leaving like three people back, you know, when the entire team's up. And you're thinking, what are you doing that for? You could lose it. And they nearly did. It was against Fulham and it went back to 4-3. So they're all, a lot of them are really attack-minded teams. Add on to that the fact that everybody's decided they're going to play out from the goalie now. Like, even if you ain't good enough, lots of them aren't good enough. And I'm not just talking about the keepers. You know, lots of them are nowhere near good enough to be playmaker playing for the back. So they're losing a lot of goals and a lot of chances from there. So that's really, really weird. Sticking top of that, how easy it is to get a penalty at the start of this season, you know, the daftness of the penalties, etc. So you've got a whole big mix of things all coming in together. And I think if you look for one reason, I think you will be barking up the wrong tree. I think there are a lot of reasons they've all come back in together. And I think maybe the oddness of the emptiness of the ground, that's probably the final thing, right, where, you know, some of the tension's taken out of some of the games. Little things like, you don't hear a guy shouting man on. You hear one of the guys shouting man on, but you used to hear 30,000 people shouting man on or whatever. So you don't get a kind of, there's a little difference there as well. So there's a whole bunch of things getting together, but it's bizarre. It's absolutely and utterly bizarre. You know, the amount of teams that are losing the amount of goals they are. I mean, Leicester, they beat Man City 5-2. I mean, that is bizarre enough, and it is in itself. And then they go and lose 3-0 to West Ham. It's all over the place. I'd hate to be a betting man just now. I really would.
Yeah, it's insane. Like, I mean, my jaw hit the floor more, I think, with events at Villa Park. And this is probably the only time that Liverpool, defending champions, losing 7-2 won't be the first port of call here. And my rationale is there could be wider and more significant ramifications at Old Trafford. So, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, how much trouble is he in now?
Well, first thing is, the best thing that happened to him was what happened at Aston Villa. It's taking a little bit of the pressure off. Just a little bit of the pressure off as well. Yeah, I mean, if it's one of those ones, if it's five, you know, it's four or five, it's really bad. Then it gets to six, and you think, no, this is awful. He has always got to come back. It was 10-9, and that made a complete mess of what was going anyway. They weren't playing well. Spurs were the better team, but when that happened, they were down to 10-9. They just didn't reorganise and restructure well enough, and no one seemed to have a particularly good game. And they hit Spurs on a good day. Now, at the moment, Spurs play well. They don't have to look really good. They can score a lot of goals because, you know, Son looked fantastic just now, and Harry Kane seems to be in fantastic form as well. Not just scoring, but creating goals as well. But, you know, I think he's in trouble, yeah. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think he'll get sacked over, you know, between now and the next game. It's just too many opportunities to bring players in and have been missed. And we're talking in the transfer window just now. And it looks as if they might buy the left-back, is it Telles?
Alex Telles, yeah.
Yeah, they don't need a left-back, they need a centre-back. Everybody knows that. He's never quite got that centre-back pairing, right? So there's a lot going on, but it's worse than that. You know, there was no real fight. And again, I'm back on it, and it does sound as if I'm biased, but there was one of the goals, and I think it was the fifth or the sixth. Just watch Paul Pogba. It's actually embarrassing. It really is embarrassing. Doesn't try a leg. You know, 1-2 around him, goes into the area, doesn't even try to get back. And you're thinking, have a level of pride at that point. Fight and battle for your teammates, your manager, your club, yourself, anything. And I'm singling him out just now because it was obvious the other ones that weren't doing well, but there was a lot of people trying, you know, making an effort. With him, it was just a jog on quite a few occasions. And you can't do that when you've got 10 men. Everybody has to work their socks off. So, you know, the problems with the quality, fair enough, but you need everybody working. And when you see that happening in that sort of situation, I thought that was awful. I thought it was dreadful to watch. It was the second worst thing I've seen in the game, obviously, after the sending off, which I thought was, honestly, head and hands. I know you want to talk about Man United, but seriously, going down and pretending you're injured like that, the game is absolutely gone. If you send off Martial and he stays on, And it, for me, it's still, and I do go on about it quite a bit, it's the worst thing you can do in football, is feign head injury. Because that's the biggest thing you're trying to get rid of in the game, the fears and worries of what got when someone gets a real injury and he throws himself down. And I don't need to tell you, everybody watched it, was completely disgusted by it.
Yeah, it was the kind of sending off I could understand if there was no VAR and the referee might have missed the initial contact and then seen Lamella go down and thought, well, this is a clear case of Martial lashing out. But the evidence was there on VAR that what they did to each other was pretty similar. If one went, they both had to go. If they could justify a yellow each and maintain 11 on the pitch side, then better again. But just one going made no sense from a VAR point of view.
Yeah, and it's one of those ones where if you, it's when I'm going to look at the ref, the what you call it, the rule book, and it's, you know, retaliation is a red card, right? And the hand to the face is a red card. So you could almost argue that, you know, the first touch is just a little touch. It's not bad. So you could argue that it's a yellow card. But the feigning of injury, I think that's another yellow. Mm. The feigning of injury is at least a yellow, and for my mind, a red. So I think that's when you look at it and you make it, you know, but it's kind of getting off the point slightly. You know, it angers me, but it angers me every damn week in the Premier League. But it's going to really have an impact someday, but more than just in an actual game, more than just somebody getting hammered, more than just a manager getting sacked. Somebody will get really injured someday, and somebody will not realise he's injured because so many people are feigning this head injury stuff. But anyway, enough of him. Sure. Mel, I've no time for him at all. But, you know, looking at Manchester United, their possession just now, it hadn't looked great up until then, but the way they imploded at that point in time. And I suppose it depends where you are. I mean, did Liverpool look any better than Manchester United? Absolutely not. But I think Jurgen's got a wee bit more in the bank than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has.
Yeah, because if the Liverpool implosion hadn't happened, you could look at the United implosion and say, well, this speaks of a team who've deserted the manager. And yet we saw a Liverpool team devoted to its manager seemingly implode in a similar-ish way. Though I don't quite think the body language was as bad as it was at Old Trafford, maybe.
I'd agree. I think the general body language wasn't, I don't care. It was, oh my God, this is weird. I can't get my head around this. I mean, remember the weird things that was going on. I can remember playing in games like that. Like, I remember once playing for Chelsea, we played QPR, and we get beat 6-0. And we were the better team. And every time the attack scored, and you were, what? And I remember playing for Everton once, we get beat 6-2 at Villa Park. And you're just thinking, no, they're actually not better than us. But every time they attacked, we scored. And it was a bit like that for a wee while there with Villa, wasn't it? And then every deflection went in as well. Yeah. So that was an absolutely surreal, weird game. And there was millions of mistakes as well. But you're right, it wasn't a complete, we're not caring. There was a kind of, I actually seen one or two players smiling at one point, you know, thinking, we can't believe this is happening. And even Jurgen Klopp did a few times as well. So yeah, it was different. And they have got so much in the bank. And they don't need to panic because they know they've got the capabilities of getting out of it. But they better be careful, because I'm sure I've mentioned it before. Have a look since Liverpool won the league. How many times have shipped a lot of goals? You remember Watford? You remember Man City 4-0? You remember Atleti? They got three past them as well at Anfield. Chelsea got three past them. They lost 5-3, but Chelsea got three past them as well. Leeds United started the season three past them as well. This is not a kind of fluke. There's something wrong at the back, and it may well be that simple thing of, you know, the two full-backs always go, and you leave the two centre-backs. And at the moment, they're not doing well enough. Mm. You know, you're aware of saying, like, OK, Van Dijk, you know, we're not going to go hard on him because he's so brilliant, etc. But he certainly needs a little bit more beside him. And they weren't working together as a pair either. So the whole thing was a shambles and a mess. But if I was them, I wouldn't be saying, right, OK, that's a one-off, it'll never happen. Be careful, there's been a couple of signs beforehand that they are shipping far too many goals in comparison to the way they did before.
OK, well, hold that thought for a minute. We'll deep dive into Liverpool in a moment. But just to finish off United then, 11 goals in three games. So, and I do want to come to Harry Maguire, by the way, who, you know, these various partners, he's a common denominator in all this. He has to be some way responsible. But if the midfield are not giving enough protection, on Pogba, I think, and I sense it in your voice even, sometimes there is a reluctance to criticise him because maybe the feeling is he gets a disproportionate level of criticism week in, week out. You know, Graeme Souness is often accused of that in a very high-profile role. But even yesterday, we had Brian Kerr on, former Republic of Ireland manager, and in advance of the game, speaking about the Brighton game the week before, he had said he was massively disappointed with the effort Pogba had put in. And he has not been on the Pogba bandwagon, the critical bandwagon, that is. So Pogba puts in a performance like that last week against Brighton, and they get lucky. And here they are, Spurs, he's had, you know, 90 more minutes in his leg, should be able to kick on, and puts in the kind of performance you've described again. Now, bar the World Cup for France, has he ever really, you know, done it in a defensive, doing the difficult aspects of the game kind of a way for Manchester United? Like, what do you do with this guy? I mean, do you just have to insulate him with defenders all around him?
Yeah, yes, it strikes me. There are some players where the game is surrounding them, right? So they are the core, they are the 10, and everybody else has to work around them. And you know what? Might be brilliant. Might be absolutely fantastic. You better be a really good team, though. And there's not that many around at the top level that can do that. I mean, if you go and look at De Bruyne, he works as well. You know, they do work. Salah, he kind of works as well. He knows when to cheat and when not to cheat, you know, when not to chase back. But he does put the effort in, and he does close down. He does all that sort of thing as well. And he does the right things. The Pogba thing, you feel uncomfortable because it feels like a bandwagon. But I mean, you just get upset with the fact that you know he's got it all. You know he's got the physique. You know he's got the skill. You know he's got everything in there. And it's just, you know, getting inside his head and saying, you've got to do all that other stuff as well, mate. Because you cost a lot of money, yes. But it's just the pride of being a top player. And he does feel that he should be one of the great players in the world. Mm. And we'd be liars to say anything else. You talk about, you know, Souness saying it as well. Souness was hardworking as well, but he was a player. He could play.
Sure.
And it upsets players who are good players to sit and watch somebody who won't put that in. And you're desperate for them to do well. You're really desperate for them to do well. It's not personal. It feels personal because he's getting all the time. But he's getting it for a reason, because there's actually not that many other players that do that don't chase somebody in a 1-2 and then are very half-hearted in a jog back when the opposition are scoring. There's just actually not that many people like that in the modern game. They work, particularly midfielders. You look at that Liverpool midfield, they got hammered, but they are one of the most hard-working groups of players you'll ever see. Mm. You know, and even their great players are actually that hard-working as well. And with Pogba, if you were the manager, you would drive you mad, because you're desperate, absolutely desperate, to have him on the field, because you know he can actually win the game for you. But you're almost playing with a man down if he's not up for it. Even if he's up for the attacking stuff and not up for the defensive stuff. Mm. And it's not for me. I'm not against Man United, not against anyone. I used to feel this in millions of years ago, a guy called Georgi Kinkladze, who everybody loved. And I used to think, I wouldn't let him near my team, because he scored these great goals. But yeah, playing with 10 men every week. Absolute playing with 10 men. They never made it.
Yeah.
And there's been a number through the years. There's just less of them these days in the Premier League, because I don't think you can get away with it.
There was a crest of a wave element when Bruno Fernandes arrived, for obvious reasons. But even watching Match of the Day last night, Jermaine Jean has picked out Højbjerg and his two midfielders around him just bossed that midfield area, and it was too easy for them. So if we're looking at the balance of that Manchester United midfield, given what you've said about Pogba, can they really afford to have, say it's a Matic in this case, but a Pogba and a Bruno Fernandes as that midfield trio?
I don't think they can against teams that are up for it. I really don't. And it hurts to say it, because they are both fantastically talented players. And it really hurts to say it. And they're both really intelligent on the ball. And you want that to be able to work. And I'm sure, I mean, he's trying to explain any sort of system that he can organise that gets them to win it. Now, there's lots of systems out there. You know, lots of teams play 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1. You know, you almost think, do you change the whole thing and play, that old Brazilian one, the 4-2-2-2-2? You know, it's a good system because it gives you two slightly behind the strikers who play wide, but they are actually players who can then be allowed a little bit of leeway and don't have to work. But it all comes down to the end. You still have to put the effort in. If you've got two or three players, if you've got one that's bad enough, but if you've got two or three players who, you know, aren't putting it in there, and by the way, if you're down to 10 men, that's head in the hand stuff. Mm. The best players in the world should do that. You know, it doesn't matter where you are, it doesn't matter system, it doesn't matter what the manager asks you to do. you do that anyway. But in simple terms, the way they're playing just now, I don't think you can actually put them both in and against the better teams and be confident that you're going to get away with it, because I'm not sure you will.
Mm. So the brilliance of Kane and Son notwithstanding, Harry Maguire, we'll pace Lindelof, we can pinpoint by now. I mean, Maguire increasingly looks part of this problem, no?
Yeah, it didn't look great for him. There was one of the goals in particular, he had three times trying to get the ball away, and it just looked a bit of a mess. You just get a feeling that he's one of those guys. See, if you stuck him in a different team like Man City, maybe he'd look great. You know, he'd look fine. But under pressure the way he is, getting very, very little support in front the way he is, it doesn't look good at all. And he does. There is no way that you're going to say that he and Lindelof are here by or whatever. There's just never been a real partnership.
No.
It's just never worked. And you could argue it's because they've never got a good one to stand beside them. But I think you make a good point. He might be part of the problem. But there's no way they're going to change that in the short term. There's no way they're going to play Lindelof and Bailly together. They're going to have to find somebody else that works along him. With his physique, you know, and the fact that he's had better times in the past, you probably have to stay with him. I would be surprised if he didn't stick with him. But, I mean, we are running out of hours now.
We sure are. And I guess a final point before we jump on to Villa Park. The camera invariably picks out Ed Woodward now. You know, he is such a part of this story. This is how many transfer windows. So the heat on the hierarchy at Manchester United is severe at the moment. And the media like the story, the fans are on this story, this is on them. If I was Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, my worry would be, fair or not, you know, leeway deserved given the lack of pre-season or not. The cheapest way out of this, by far, the cheapest way out of this for Ed Woodward is not to have to buy three or four or five different players. It's just to sign Mauricio Pochettino, and suddenly that will dampen a lot of the critique.
Well, it was giving you a little bit of breathing space, but remember, he's chopped and changed it about before, and it's not necessarily worked. That is a temptation, because he's organised the team, particularly as far as really, really well in the past, you know, and he knows the Premier League, all that sort of stuff, and maybe he would get the very best out of those players. But remember, there was a massive gap near the end for Pochettino. And you're not getting an absolute stick-on. But there is no such thing as a stick-on. A stick-on was Jose Mourinho. And even that didn't really work for Manchester United. So, you know, I still think you're flipping a coin, United, with the squad that they've got just now. Because the expectation is so high. The expectation is, you know, top four, minimum top four. And you look at them at the moment, and there's maybe not enough. The cheaper way would be to get rid of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But the pressure on the club now and Woodward, etc. now, if they do that and Pochettino doesn't work, it's going to be massive. Having said that, it's a truism in football. As soon as the camera starts going on to him and people start looking at the ownership and the upper echelons of the club, that is definitely when the manager's in most danger. Mm. Always the most danger, because they want to deflect. So you say cheaper, I say deflection.
Yes, okay, I'll definitely accept that. Just before they know it, they're closing in on a decade since Ferguson left very soon and not even close to a title. It's amazing how it happens. So Liverpool then, so you made the point about this issue of defence being approaching trend territory. You know, this is certainly not a one-off. So the high line is talked about. That's the go-to issue here. Now, the high line seems to have worked for them very well in the past. Why so exposed of late?
I think it's not just Liverpool. I mean, Liverpool are another football team. They're very special, and they'll close down the midfield. Everybody knows. You play a high line, and that's fine as long as you've got pacey defenders, a keeper who's quick to come out. But more specifically, make sure that your midfield are right on top of the opposition midfield. You don't give them time to get their head up. If you give decent players a time with their head up, and there's a high line behind it, it's really easy to find the ball in there. It's actually not complicated. It's not difficult. I don't know if you remember the Southampton game against Spurs when they played this suicidal high line recently, and you're thinking, what are you doing? I mean, it's just like, I often hear people say, oh, the game's moved on a lot, you know, and it's so technical now. I'm thinking, nah, I wouldn't have done that 30 years ago, 40 years ago. That's basic. Don't do that if you can't close down the midfield. And maybe that is the thing with Liverpool in that situation. I talk about the fact that not fully match fit to the level you have to be to play that closing down tight game. well, teams will get a lot of that space and they'll get their heads up. But who are those types of players? Well, John McGinn, he's hell of a good when you give him a lot of better space. Apart from the fact that he bully you and run by you, he's actually can pick a pass and always has been able to do that. Grealish, the same. And you start looking at the type of teams that can do that to you. Although Aston Villa struggled last season, what they've put together in that midfield now, don't give them space and don't play a high line. They will destroy you. Mm. They absolutely will destroy you. They're good enough to do that. I don't know how many more are as able to do that. Spurs will do it to you, others will do it to you. But it's your dream come true. If you're a midfielder, a winger or whatever, and you're slightly deeper, and you see that high line in front of you, it's your dream come true. Mm. It really is, because you'll always find your quick striker. It's not even complicated or difficult. It, sometimes looks dead good. Oh, what a lovely through ball! And you're thinking, yeah, there was 50 yards to fit that ball into there. And that's the way it looks with Liverpool. And the technical stuff where the two centre-backs are never talking to each other, all that stuff, and the two full-backs are going, we know all that stuff. What they do need is, it's like the N'Golo Kante kind of sitting in midfield kind of player who covers it all the time. And they just didn't really have that on this occasion.
No. It was strange. And maybe the Grealish goal at the end is the wrong one to pick out because the game is obviously taking on a different quality then, but that just looked far too easy. Like, was it like 2-on-2, but Grealish had about 20 yards between him and the next Liverpool defender, so it just looked like that can't be the way to set up. The one I wanted to get your thought on was his first half. It's a lot of goals to keep track of here, so you'll have to bear with me, but ball in the right back position, Aston Villa, first half, and the Liverpool back four are in a relatively straight line, they're coherent enough, and the ball is played over the top, and Jamie Carragher made this point in the coverage last night. You can actually see as contact has been made with the ball by the right back, that Liverpool four are stepping up a line and not catching the Villa players offside. So that exacerbates the whole situation. He was saying, look, I get the high line benefit and I get, if you're going to press high up the pitch, you need a high line. Everyone has to be up together. But the issue he had with it was at point of pass being played, that's when that back four need to accept reality and turn and get on their bikes.
Yeah, and it's one of those ones. This is their way of doing it. So you do it almost like an automaton. It's robotic. And you think, well, don't do it robotically. You've got to think as well. These are fluid games, these games. They need to be adapted to. And you're right, there didn't seem to be that fluidity of thinking. They kept on going up. There's the other thing of, remember, they've done this for a long time. And they've usually got a keeper hammering out who's covering a good 30, 40 yards. His starting position's 18-yard line, maybe 20 yards out. And he's going to come and get some of that stuff. Didn't have that. Mm. Wrong keeper. Not playing the same way at all. So they're still trying to do that when there's so many things different from what has been in the past doing that. The other thing, I hope it's not the case. I mean, certainly the two, we know the fullbacks are too far forward for a normal defence if you're going to do that. But it's sometimes a bit lazy. You don't want to do the hard yards back. It's easier to go and step out and usually catch people offside, but you do that once too often, you get caught, you look stupid. And they did look stupid a few times, and certainly the one you're talking about, that was the case. They were doing it like as robots. Don't do it as that. Think as well. Defenders aren't stupid. I know us forwards and midfielders used to say that, but they're not. They need to be able to think it. And they weren't thinking it very well at all. And it's interesting to see that the amount of teams that have really quickly spotted, areas of weakness in Liverpool's defence, when as before, up until they just about won the league, we were saying they can go 2-2 at the back. They were doing it time and time again. They were going 2-2 because they believed in their two centre-backs. They probably shouldn't do that anymore. I don't think they can do that. They can do that with Van Dijk, but I don't think the quality's there elsewhere.
I can't wait for next week, I have to say. This could be an interesting season.
2 weeks, sadly.
2 weeks, oh, of course. Yeah. We've got a big game in Bratislava, so we'll have something. Before you go, very final word then on Elland Road. Do Man City feel worse or better? Is this a massive opportunity, given away, or are they kind of thinking, well, geez, there's weird stuff going on, 1-1 is fine. They dominated the first 20 minutes and people didn't see the game. Even on commentary, Martin Tyler, Gary Neville saying, well, this is a reality check for Leeds. And City missed a lot of chances. Really, if you're to be brutal, that was the time to go 3-4-0 up. They were that on top. And then, the second half was brilliant. Did you get to see it in full?
I've got to see bits of it because I'm flicking through about 100 games at this point in time. But it sounds exactly the same as they were when they played the last game I've seen them against Fulham. They just keep on doing the same things. They just keep on doing it. And that's why Pep loves them. Psychologically, they're exactly the same person. We don't care about anyone else. We will do this. If we get beat and we are doing what we do, shrug our shoulders and move on. We'll win more often than not, and we want to win the right way. I mean, it's old school. You look at them and you think, you're going to get done. It's not going to work. And eventually, you will get done. But you know what? In these mad times, it may well be that Leeds United have walked into the Premier League precisely the right time to walk into the Premier League. You know, it is incredibly open. They will have some games where they will lose 3, 4, and 5 goals. I'm absolutely convinced that. They've already lost 3, 4 against Liverpool. But I think there will be a number of games where they do that. But it was just as many as them, they will score 3 or 4. And you just look at them and you think, they're all over the place. Liverpool, for once, were all over the place. Man United were all over the place. You know, Spurs are up and down. Chelsea, as I said before, West Brom, they were up then, down then. Against Palace, first half, dreadful. Second half, 4 goals. It's just, try and gauge what a team's doing is hard. Try and gauge what they're doing half to half. At the moment, is incredibly good and difficult. There is one team, though, and I must mention them now. Come on, Everton at the moment. That was the one. And I'm watching them and I'm thinking, that's a structured, balanced-looking team out there. That is unlike anything else in the Premier League. That's a really sensible, that's a Carlo side that's been put together. And that's a team that, you know, Alan wasn't playing. Charlison went off injured. Andre Gomez wasn't playing. They had 3 of their main players out. And they still looked like a really brilliantly well-structured side. Like, Carlos had 10 months to put that together. Now, I'm not saying they're going to win anything, but looking at everybody else around, they look about the most sensible team just now. And I cannot remember the last time I thought that about Everton.
Bit of sense. It was sensible. In a world gone mad, it's what we all need.
But sensible, but fun.
Yeah.
But interesting, because they're doing good stuff as well. They've got, you know, good players, and James is, you know, more I watch him in person particularly, I then begin to realise the technical things he's got. I was talking to Michael Keane about him earlier in the week, and I'd say to him, so what is it then? What is it James has got? I mean, we talk about him possibly being a real top world class player, and he goes, yes, yeah, we train with him every day. You cannot ping a ball him hard enough that he will just take it in one touch and be away or move. Or create space. He says it's unbelievable in training. He's just so far above. And I'm talking about top professionals here. He's just miles above. Never ever seems to make an error. Never loses possession. Always sees everything. And what happens, because he's not quite, everyone closes him down. But of course, he's got the vision of the whole game in his head. Everybody's making moves for him. As soon as if you get a chance to watch him, as soon as he gets ball, don't watch him, watch everybody else in the Everton team. They all move. Because the other thing, he can find me. And it's a totally different attitude of, some people get the ball and you think, well, there's no point in me running for it, guys, because I ain't getting it. He gets the ball, they all move. The other thing, I can get this. Dina, he must have found him about 9 or 10 times, and he's 70 yards away in this game. And it's made such a difference to that team.
It sure has. Pat and Evan, as ever, pleasure. We'll talk to you in a week or two.
Look forward to it. See you then.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.